Okay. This is one of those times when you think, uh-oh, because I studied the previous verse. I didn't check it. So that's okay. This is all new for me too. So this is great. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Loka. People in general. Vikarma. Work without sense. Nirata. Engaged in. Kusale. In beneficial activities. Pramataha. Negligent. Karmani. Inactivity. Yayam. This. Tvat, by you. Udite, enunciated. Bhavat, of you. Achane, in worship. Sve, their own. Ya, who. Tatvat, as long as. Ashya, of the people in general. Balavan, very strong. Iha, this. Jitta asam, struggle for existence. Sadhya, directly. Chinati, is cut to pieces. Animishaya, by the eternal time. Nama, my obeisances. Ashtu, let there be. Tashmai, unto him. Translation. Could somebody just get me a little bit of water, please, Prabhupada? People in general in all engage in foolish acts, not in the really beneficial activities enunciated directly by you, for their guidance. As long as their tendency for foolish work remains powerful, all their plans in the struggle for existence will be cut to pieces. I therefore offer my obeisances unto him who acts as eternal time. Now, it's a long purport, so I'll just read that. People in general are all engaged in senseless work. They are systematically unmindful of the real beneficial work, which is devotional service of the Lord, technically called archana regulations. The archana regulations are directly instructed by the Lord in the Narada Pancharatra and are strictly followed by intelligent men who know well that the highest perfectional goal of life is to reach Lord Vishnu, who is the root of the tree, called the cosmic manifestation. Also in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita, such regulative activities are clearly mentioned. Foolish people do not know that their self-interest is in realization of Vishnu. In the Bhagavatam 7:5:30-32, it says, Matir na Krishna parata svatova mito bi padyeta kriha vratahanam ananda gobir visatam tamishram Puna punas chavita charan charvanam nate vidhu svanan gatir hi vishnum durasya he banhir arta maniha andha yata daneya upahi yam manas te pisha tantrayam uru dhami padaha naisham mati Tadvad uru krama rangrim asprisat anu tad paga mo yad arta mai yama yasam para rajo bishkam nishkincha channam na vritnita yavat. Persons who are determined to totally rot in false material happiness cannot become Krishna minded either by the instructions from teachers, by self-realization, or by parliamentary discussions. They are dragged by unbridled senses into the darkest regions of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chew. Because of their foolish activities, they are unaware that the ultimate goal of human life is to achieve Vishnu, the Lord of the cosmic manifestation, and so their struggle for existence is in the wrong direction of material civilization, which is under the external energy. They are led by similar foolish persons, just as one blind man is led by another blind man, and both fall into a ditch. Such foolish men cannot be attracted towards the activities of the Supreme Powerful, who is actually the neutralizing measure for their foolish activities, unless and until they have the good sense to be guided by the great souls who are completely freed from material attachment. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord asks everyone to give up all occupational duties and absolutely engage in archana activities, or in pleasing the Lord. But almost no one is attracted to such archana activities. Everyone is more or less attracted by the activities which are conditions of rebellion against the Lord. The systems of jnana and yoga are also indirectly rebellious acts against the Lord. There is no auspicious activity except archana of the Lord. Jnana and yoga are sometimes accepted within the purview of archana when the ultimate aim is Vishnu, not otherwise. The conclusion is that only the devotees of the Lord are bona fide human beings eligible for salvation. Others are vainly struggling for the existence without actual benefit. Omagyana timiranda shyaganamjana shalakya chakshura militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Om Vishnu Padme Krishna Stagatadeshi. So as I said, I didn't prepare for this class, so this could be interesting. But basically, it's the same topic all the way through, in that Lord Brahma is praying to Lord Vishnu, and this was a time when Lord Brahma is just about to do his creation again, so it's quite an interesting section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This last little thing was really interesting here, where Prabhupada mentions the system of jnana and yoga are also indirectly rebellious acts against the Lord. And I was just wondering, you know, this was so pertinent in that recently we had this visit by Baba Ramdev, you know, and he's espousing yoga all over the world, but it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with Vishnu, with archana, with actually trying to make a connection with God. It's all about physical health. Does anybody go to his program? You went, didn't you, Prabhu? Yeah? And it was all about physical health, correct? You do this pranayama and you'll get that benefit, and you do this exercise and that will help. It was interesting that he did this also at Parliament House. He was first welcome. He's so popular because he's pretty well on the bodily platform. He's just doing these yoga asanas, you know, that people will get a better body and a better life and so on and so forth. You'll live healthier. And it was really funny. He had a reception at Parliament House, which was really, you know, all the politicians came and everything. It was at Parliament House, Queen's Hall. And they invited me to come, so I was sitting at the front there and watching Baba. And all of a sudden, you know, all the politicians were nicely addressing him. Is it working? Yeah, it's working. All the politicians were nicely addressing him, and there was great speeches. Thank you for coming. We really welcome you here. It's such a wonderful thing to have you here. You're doing such good work, telling us how to be a better body and get more attached to the body, and how this yoga system is helping us so much for our... And all of a sudden, he gets up and he gives a few words about how yoga is so healthy for you and so on and so forth. And all the politicians were also sitting on the stage with him. And in particular, there was one quite large politician lady, and he was talking about pranayama, and he said, yeah, do this pranayama. And he turned around to her and he looked her straight in the face, and even a fat lady like you can actually do this and you will become thin. And everybody just, oh boy, you know, you don't say that in the Western world. And this poor lady, you know, she was sitting up on stage, so everybody was there, and she turned red and she became really embarrassed, you know. But, you know, even the Lord is so merciful that Baba Ramdev, he came here. And he was very eager to come here. I noticed, interestingly enough, when we came into the temple room, he didn't offer obeisances. He had no real understanding that this is, you know, a place where I humble myself before the Supreme Lord. But in the same token, he really appreciated the deities. He was overwhelmed by Radha Ballabha, enchanted by Gauranitai, and especially he liked Jagannath. So that was really a positive thing. He loved the prasadam, although he didn't eat much prasadam. I was trying to encourage him to eat more, but he had another yoga program to go to at Melbourne University. And he said, Bhakta, if I have some too much, you know, I won't be able to do my yoga asanas, you know. There might be some accident happen while he's doing his yoga asanas, because he's quite physical. Even at Parliament House, you know, he had his dhoti, and all of a sudden he chucked off his chadar and wrapped his dhoti into shorts, and everybody's going, what the heck is this guy doing? And he starts standing on his head in Parliament House. Anyway, so he said to me, Bhakta, I can't eat too much. But anyway, we gave him something. I said, well, you'd have to try out one of these maha sweets. So we gave him a bit of sandesh. Ooh, I like the sandesh. That was nice. And then he had a pakora, and he enjoyed the pakora. And then there was some halva. Now, he really got off on the halva. He like, this is the best halva I've had, you know. And so we gave him the mercy, and we gave him books and everything. So he got the mercy ultimately. But it was interesting how popular he is when he's just using this yoga as a means of developing the body and being more entrenched in the body. The healthier your body, the more you think, I am the body, you know, in a sense. So Lord Brahma's process, his prayers here to Vishnu are a praying, my dear Lord, let me do my work properly. Let me do my creation properly. This is the whole theme of this section of the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita states in the purport in chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita, we're just reading chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita at home. I quote this from Srila Prabhupada: the creation, maintenance and annihilation of this material cosmic manifestation is completely dependent on the supreme will of the personality of Godhead. And at the end of the millennium, it means the death of Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is going through this process of birth, of creation. Every day he creates again. Every day, the same thing, you know, day after day. Now, Lord Brahma lives for 100 years. Can anybody tell me how long one of his years is, one of his days are in earth terms, in earth calculation? Anybody have any idea? Can you, the scholars, who knows? Yes, Prabhu? Huh? Yeah, something like that. I've read 4 billion 300 million years. Is that correct? Would that be about it? Long time. One day is a very, very long time. So Brahma lives for 100 years. At night, that's the same duration as the day. His month consists of 30 days and the year consists of 12 months. So after 100 such years, Brahma dies, as Prabhupada is pointing out, and the devastation or annihilation takes place. And this means that the energy is manifested again within the Supreme, and again it's wound up in the Lord and then again manifests. So the Vedic aphorism is that he expands himself in this material energy and the whole cosmic manifestation takes again. So Lord Brahma starts his day, and this is like the prayer to Lord Vishnu. He starts his day and he prays to Lord Vishnu to actually do this creation service again well. So basically this whole creation process is all in a day's work. So this is Lord Brahma's service to Krishna to create this whole material manifestation. Similarly, we as individuals also have this duty. We're small creators. In our own way, we do our own small creative things, whether it's raising our children, working, studying, so many different things. And we should take Lord Brahma's example and pray to the Lord to guide us and help us that what we're doing is actually fruitful and in service to Him, as is mentioned in this purport and many of the other purports that we've read in this chapter. There's a certain amount of work that's allotted to us. We're given a particular task in our life, and we have to do that to the best of our abilities. Sometimes people complain, oh, why do I have to work in the office? Why do I have to work at home? Why do I have to do this and that? But in actual fact, if we can just see that, if we can dovetail our service into service to Krishna, then it will be actually fruitful. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says that we have to work for Krishna. What is that one? In 9:27, yat karosi yadanasi yat dadasi dadasi yat yat tapasi kuntaya yat kurushvam madaparam. So Krishna says, O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as any austerities you may perform, should be done as a service to me. And so we have to take this very seriously. So when we start our day, at the very start of the day, we have to be like Lord Brahma and pray to the Supreme. My dear Lord, let me work in your service. Let me do my work in your service. And then that is actually archana. Our work becomes service, as is mentioned in this purport. That's worship. So our work can even be a service. Now our work has to be done very diligently. Like Lord Brahma, he didn't take time out, he didn't try and skirt out, he didn't try and cheat the system and take a bit of rest and work on a slow pace or anything. He was full on. He had to do the service. It was interesting on the news last night, there was a gentleman who, a cargo worker who was working, loading up aeroplanes, you know, with cargo, and he thought he would take a little nap. He was lazy, and he thought he'd take a little nap, and the plane took off, and he's in the cargo hold. And so he rang 911 and said, I'm stuck in a cargo hold, and I can hardly breathe, you know, come and help me out. So laziness never solves anything, you know. This guy wanted to take it, he got fired, he got sacked. They got him eventually, the plane had to turn around, land again, and take him out of the cargo hold. But the point of it is that his laziness actually got him into trouble. So a devotee is never lazy. A devotee has to think all the time, how can I engage myself 100% in serving Krishna? And sometimes we may think, well, I'm working in an office, I'm working in a laboratory, I'm working teaching, I'm doing so many different things. How can this be service to Krishna? But it can be. Even if we're acquiring money, if some of that money is then utilized in the service to Krishna, that's rightfully done. Understanding that your boss, your material boss at your business or wherever, is really not the ultimate boss. In actual fact, you're working for Krishna. And the money that you're earning is providing a home and comfort for your family, or the home that you're making as a housewife is providing comfort and satisfaction for your family. To be Krishna conscious, to be servants of Krishna, this is what it's all about. So, in everything that we do, we have to remember Krishna in everything that we do. And Krishna recommends, do it for me. Do everything for me. This is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Just whatever you do, do it for me. So if you do it for this consciousness of thinking about Krishna, you'll be rewarded immensely. Prabhupada says, thus, the duty of everybody is to mold his or her life in such a way that they will never forget Krishna in any circumstance. Everyone has to work for the maintenance of his body and soul together, and Krishna recommends herein that one should work for him. So, like we all pray in the morning, this has to be, this mood of my dear Lord, please engage me in your service, has to be the mood when we chant our mantras in the morning, when we chant Hare Krishna in the morning. The first thing when we wake in the morning, we should first give praise to our spiritual master. Prabhupada said this is of the utmost importance. Whether we're here at the temple or at home, it takes exactly 7 minutes, 10 minutes to do the prayers. Samsara dava nanani laloka. Just understanding that this knowledge of Krishna consciousness has been given to you. You have such an amazing, we all have such an amazing opportunity. Such great knowledge has been given to us about our real constitutional position, that we're actually servants of Krishna. So that's the first thing. Then we go into our chanting, and our chanting is a meditation. It's a meditation, like Lord Brahma's prayers here. My dear Lord, how can I engage in your service? Please engage me in your service. Please let me do more for you, somehow or another. So this is our archana. And then we start our daily work, whatever that may be. In full confidence, in full dynamism, in full strength. No laziness. That we're not caught in the baggage compartment of an aeroplane or anything. We are 100% engaged. And how can I do more? How can I serve you more, my Lord? This is the mantra that we're praying for as we chant our rounds. And so Prabhupada actually said that a devotee has to work 100%, very, very hard. And that at the end of the day, they are so fatigued that no material desires come in at all. We just want to rest. And then we wake up early again to do again service to Krishna. And there's really nothing quite like service to Krishna. We can remember before we were devotees what it was like. Some of us can remember what it was like to actually work for a non-devotee, to work as a non-devotee. It's pretty hellish. Recently I had an opportunity to address people in a cemetery. You know the necropolis, the big cemetery in Springvale on the Princess Highway. So they asked me to give a presentation as to how Hindus and people, Vaishnavas, Hare Krishnas, view death and dying. But the interesting thing was is that when I came there and all the workers were there. There were the grave diggers, the gardeners, administration, front office, everybody was there and they all came. And there was two sessions. So each time there was about 100 people wanting to find out how the Hare Krishnas view death and dying. The funny thing was, it was very good, they taped it and everything, but the funny thing was is that they were sitting there and I was contemplating and I started the lecture off by saying, actually, 40 years ago, I was one of you. 40 years ago, I worked at that cemetery. I worked at that cemetery as a gardener before I was a devotee. And here were these guys that were, you know, in that same consciousness as I was at that stage. But it was at that stage that I started to see the reality of existence. It was at that stage that I started to see the impermanence of material existence. I saw birth and death. I saw the beauty of the roses. Has anybody been to the necropolis, the cemetery down? It's actually a very beautiful place. Beautiful gardens, beautiful flowers. Everything is tastefully done. So I worked there and I could see the beauty of life on the one hand and the destruction of life on the other hand. There was a really interesting scenario at one stage and I mentioned it to these guys. One time I was working in the garden and pruning the roses and so on and so forth. And then one of the workers from the crematorium came up to myself and my mate Murray, who was working with me on that day in the garden, and he said, would you like to come and have a look what happens to a body when it gets cremated? And my inquisitiveness was, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing what happens, you know. So Murray and myself went down to the cremation area and there was a body in what's like, somebody may have seen it when devotees are cremated, it's like a pizza oven and the coffin goes in there and then they switch on the gas and it's like this big flame. So anyway, Murray and myself were looking through the little keyhole at this coffin and all of a sudden the heat heated up this area and the fire, and all of a sudden this coffin just exploded and the body went, stood up like this, the dead body, right? So we all, you know, poor old Murray fainted. Boom, down he went, we picked him up, carried him out. But the point of it was that was the point at which I started to understand the impermanence of existence and that we're nothing but just material energy. And that's when I started to think about meditation, spiritual life, and it was some time later that I became a devotee. So similarly, as I said, for an individual, that was a major thing. So even in a job like that, we can start to develop our sense of love for God and our service to God. As a Christian, when I was a young kid,
And I mentioned this once before.
We were told that on every page of our book when we were young kids in primary school, at every page of our book we had to write AMDG on the top of our page, on every book. And that AMDG was all my work done for God. All my work done for God. So in all different religious traditions, this is still that essence that we are not here just for sense gratification, just to be a better yogi, just to be a better bodily concept. We're here to actually serve God. And whatever work is allotted to us. So do it for me. Krishna says, do it for me. Brahma wanted to create the universe to the best of his ability. He tried his best. He wanted to do his best. The material world, however, has so many deficiencies. There's so many different things within this material world that are deficient. There's variegatedness. And in the Bhagavad Gita, the Mayavadi sees everything as impersonal. No personality behind anything. It's all one energy. And in fact, nothing is real. That's their point of view. Brahmanichad Brahma Satyam, you know, where it's all just a one. Devotees understand that this material world is actually a temporary thing. It's a temporary thing. Something lasts longer than others, but everything in essence is a temporary arrangement. And there's this illusion at the end, and there's a start. So Brahma has this understanding that he has to do this creation. So in other religions, putting my interfaith hat on, in other religions, some people also have this understanding of creation and dissolution. But the majority of religions believe that there is only one creation and one dissolution, and that's it. But in Vedic texts, we understand that there's a cycle that goes on and on and on. Some Christian groups actually believe that there are different cycles and different universes and different creators of different universes. The Mormons, in actuality, believe that there is a creator in every universe and there are multiple universes. So they have this sort of vague understanding of a Lord Brahma creating a universe. But in essence, they don't know the root behind all the different creations, as we do in Krishna consciousness. So, oh yeah, that's right. It reminds me that, remember the last time I was talking about how we should be remembering our preaching adventures? Did anybody take that to heart? Anybody think about that? Again, this is part of the whole thing about working for Krishna. We have to be mindful of what we're doing. And what's the greatest work that we can do for Krishna is to preach Krishna consciousness, to encourage a person in Krishna consciousness. So at the last class I was asking everybody, please, can you somehow or other think of something, be mindful during your day's work, whatever that may be, of how you can be preaching to someone, how you can be connecting with someone. So at the end of this class, I'm going to pick somebody, anybody, random, and see what sort of adventure they've had, and you can relate it to the rest of the congregation here. So have a think. What happened this week that was a spiritual adventure for you? Okay? One of my adventures this week was really interesting. I had the opportunity to host, some of you saw that we had it. Where's Kasturika? She helped me out with that. We had an opportunity to have you know how I'm involved with interfaith here in Melbourne, and especially here in Port Phillip. And we had the meeting of the interfaith group here at the temple for the first time. So all the different delegates from all the different faith traditions came here. And it was really a wonderful facility. Where's Aditi? Aditi. Aditi made this beautiful cake and she made this beautiful juice. And it was the afternoon offering, so it was Maha Maha Prasad. And all of them got to enjoy this beautiful prasadam that she had made, you know. And everyone relished the cake. It was a simple cake, you know, just a nice cake with a bit of jam. But, oh, I've never tasted such a nice cake. They're all like, this is, you know, people from the Jewish tradition, from the Muslim tradition, from the Buddhist tradition. All these different people were. So then they said, after our meeting was finished, they said, okay, Bhakta, do you mind very much if we just have a look around? I said, no worries, we'll have a tour. So we took them for a tour. So remember again, these are Orthodox Christians, Orthodox Jews with the little skull cap, Muslims who don't believe in idols, you know, and think that it's actually demoniac, right? So these guys all come into the temple room. First they were astounded by Srila Prabhupada. They really loved Srila Prabhupada. And then they went to the deities. And every one of them commented how beautiful the deities were. They loved the deities. Even the Muslim man said, wow, your altar is beautiful. You know, they were just astounded by the whole thing. So this was such a wonderful preaching opportunity. And the mayor, the deputy mayor was here as well, right? And he's French. And he's very avant-garde, very... How he ever became the director or the leader of this interfaith group is beyond me, because he's as atheistic or agnostic as you can get it. He thinks that any religion is a bit of a, you know, it's like, oh, it's orbity, you know. He's very... I can't speak a French accent, but he was really quite funny. But he came in here and he said, oh, Bhakta, this is like a hidden treasure here. Now, he's the deputy mayor of this electorate. He had no idea about the beauty of the Melbourne Temple. I said, well, we're doing some renovation work. You know, it's not in its full glory at the moment, but it will be in due course of time when we repaint everything. And he said, no, Bhakta, this is an absolute palace. He said, I never expected this from you. He said, you always come to the meetings and you're dressed in such humble clothes, you know. It looks very simple sort of clothing. I always wear just a kurta and pants or something like that. And he said, but you actually live in the palace. And I said, well, it's not my palace, it's actually God's palace, you know. And I'm simply his servant and I get to enjoy this palace, you know. And it's so uplifting. It's so uplifting to be part of that. So this was a great opportunity, especially how you see that Prabhudas is now developing the front garden area. Anybody had a look at that this morning? It's going to look fantastic. And Gurpreet is doing the painting everywhere and we're making it sparkle. There's lawn going out the front. The cricket pitch will be going. No more cricket pitch. And so, you know, it's a beautiful place. This is the place of God. And so this is our service to God. This is our service to God. So they were astounded by the beauty. This is such a beautiful place. So I told him that we're in the process of renovating and freshening up the place for the 40th anniversary. Similarly, with each new creation, Lord Brahma freshens up his creation. He just refreshes. You know, we go through the different yugas. Kali Yuga is a pretty dreadful sort of place. And then at the end of Kali Yuga, again, it's refreshing and the new Satya Yuga begins. So spring cleaning for Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma... Shadow even is utilized when Lord Brahma creates. His shadow is used for the five types of ignorances. And the five types of ignorances to cover the living entity with different kinds of illusions and to keep them nicely identified with their body. So this is Lord Brahma's shadow. And develop a good portion of self-centeredness. This is what keeps us in this material body. So also, and you may not know this, but in the creation, Lord Brahma's buttocks, his bottom, out of his bottom came children. And those children were demons. Anybody read that in the Srimad Bhagavatam? They were demons. And these demons were sexually agitated and they started to chase Lord Brahma and he was freaking out. What? First he thought it was a joke. What the hell are these guys after, you know? And then he realized, actually, this is a serious thing. They're really wanting to rape me. And it's like, what the heck is going on here? So these were his creation, like, came from him. So then he was in desperation. He called out to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu said, oh, just change your body. You have the ability to change your body. And so Lord Brahma cast off his body, that tamasic body that they were chasing, got a new body. And that body that he discarded became a voluptuous, sensual entity, which the demons then thought, oh, we'll follow that one. And they followed that lusty body, the tamasic body. So these are all interesting things about the creation of Lord Brahma. So sometimes in his creation, unexpected things pop up. Just like in our life, when we're doing our service to Krishna, interesting things pop up and things sometimes develop and we're wondering what the heck is going on. Sometimes we're nicely situated in a particular job. We think, yes, I'm rendering nice service to Krishna and everything is going well. And then all of a sudden there's an upheaval. some political thing happens or something happens and all of a sudden you haven't got a job and you're thinking, what the heck should I do? You have to understand that at every step in your life, Krishna is giving you the direction. Always remain connected with Krishna and always think, how can I serve you more? And Krishna will find something for you to do even better than what you've been doing. He's the source of everything. He's the primary creator and he's the source of everything, material and spiritual. So Krishna will look after you. And Lord Brahma prays here also in this verse, but Lord Brahma prays, you are the root and everything is coming from you. Shiva is the destroyer, I am the creator, Lord Brahma says, and you are the principal energy behind it. So this again is something that we can contemplate. As you know, before I was a devotee also, I was an artist, a painter. And sometimes an artist is called a creator. Who's the creator of this masterpiece? Right? And when we were in Holland, one of my favorite artists was Rembrandt. Everybody know who Rembrandt is? Yeah. So I went to his place, the place where he used to paint. Yeah, and he's considered one of the greatest artists, one of the greatest creators of artistic work. But in that studio of his, you were privy to see how he actually made the component parts for his paintings. So how he actually mixed the paints. And how, you know, so an artist is called the creator of a painting, but actually the painting source, the paints, the pigments, the ochres and everything come from nature. And so, you know, ultimately the root of his creation is coming from Krishna. So when we have Muchukunda here and he's painting wonderful paintings, he had the exhibition the other day, you know, we say he's a wonderful creator. When we go to Gopal's and we go up the stairs and we see his creation, we think, wow, he's a really nice creator. That's his job, like a Lord Brahma, he's creating. But where does he get his paints from? They're all sourced from the Supreme. That, you know, we can say, well, he gets it from Eckersley or whatever. But actually, where does Eckersley get it from? But ultimately, it all comes from the Supreme Lord. So Lord Brahma is like the artist, the creator. And these are all external things. So whatever your occupation, it has to be done in the service of the Lord. Whether you're a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, whether you're Brahmachari, Brahmacharini, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi, it doesn't matter. That's just your service, and your service is to God. That's all an external thing. Internally, we are just simply servants of Krishna. And that's the beauty of it, if we're just servants of Krishna. And you perform your duty, you perform your service to please Krishna, to give Krishna pleasure. And that's the perfection of your life. You know, like Muchukunda Prabhu could be creating pictures of landscapes, and I can relate to that, landscapes or abstracts or whatever. And after a period of time, boring. But when you can do wonderful smiling pictures of Krishna and the cows and his pastimes, Muchukunda is in ecstasy. Because he's rendering his talents to service to Krishna. So this is a wonderful opportunity. So our pleasure is giving pleasure to Krishna. And to the degree which we think in terms of our own happiness, that to the degree will be our suffering. Today or tomorrow. If we're constantly in a selfish mode, then that will be our suffering, either today or tomorrow. And to the degree that we have selflessness, surrendering over to Krishna, your propensities for pleasure, for serving Krishna, you will experience great joy. That's absolutely guaranteed. It's guaranteed by the acharyas, simply by rendering that. So again, in my interfaith service, sometimes you have some really wonderful surprises, you know, when you're dealing with other people of faith. It's really quite, you know, because Krishna consciousness is one way to approach God, and it's the best way to approach God, but other people still make attempts in their own religious traditions. And in particular, we came across this year. This year is the 500th anniversary of a saint, a female saint, Saint Teresa of Avila. Did you know that? Saint Teresa of Avila, you know? Amazing personality. This is her 500th centenary. It's 500 years. So this woman, this saintly woman, is remembered 500 years later. Can you imagine how they're going to think of Srila Prabhupada in 500 years' time? This one saintly woman. She's a very saintly woman, Saint Teresa. And she was so enraptured in thinking about God
that she would be praying in her church and praying so deeply about God that she would levitate, that she'd lose all bodily conception, and she would just float. And so people would come in the church and they'd see her floating in the air praying to God. This is how powerful this woman was. So she was a powerful individual. And I wanted to just read one prayer that she wrote in her lifetime. Very beautiful prayer. And this is to her disciples. Let nothing disturb you. Let nothing make you afraid. All things are passing. God alone never changes. Patience gains all things. If you have God, you will want for nothing. God alone suffices. So this is her prayer. God alone suffices. What verse in the Bhagavad Gita would you say that this is related to, that you could relate this to? Anybody have any ideas? I'll read it again. Let nothing disturb you. Let nothing make you afraid. All things are passing. God alone never changes. Patience gains all things. If you have God, you will want for nothing. God alone suffices. Brahma Bhuta Pranasatma Asochitina Satkanchiti Samashu Bhuta Shu Madhbhaktim Labhatekara. So that's, and when you read, has anybody read the purport to that purport in 1854, the end of the Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada is, that purport is so powerful. He's explaining about the Mayavadi concept of actually becoming one, and that for them, this oneness is the final thing for them. But for a devotee, it's simply the beginning. To understand that we are part and parcel of God and that we actually render service to God on that level of understanding that we're part of Him. So this is, Prabhupada explains that. So one who is on the spiritual platform, Prashnatma, he's eternally joyful, nasochiti nakanchati. He doesn't hanker for anything or lament for anything. Everything is just for the Supreme Lord. So our whole life is simply engrossed in hankering for what we have and what we've lamented for what we've missed out on. If you talk to a mundane person, that's the only thing they talk about. Oh, I could have been this and I haven't done that, and so on and so forth. So that's material life, simply hankering and lamenting. A burning desire of selfishness. That's the material person is captured with this burning desire for selfishness. Modern society is very expert in creating propaganda to increase our hankering for things. Things that you even never imagined that you would want. It's so fun sometimes as a devotee to sort of look back. You know, like if we look back 20 years ago, did we want an iPad? Did we want an iPod? Did we want even colour TV or something like that? But it's, material energy always creates these wonderful things that we want. Oh, I've got to have that. The latest phone, I've got to have that. Why? Because I can do this and this and this and this with that. And I can take photos and I can do that. But 20 years ago, there was no thought about having a phone. I mean, we saw it on cartoons. Perhaps Dick Tracy used to have a little phone on his watch and you think, gee, that'd be pretty cool to have that. Now you have it. So material energy is always presenting things. Oh, you can have this, you can have that. And in the future, what's next? You know, we got iPad, mobile phones now, so many different things. The next big thing is 3D TV. They're trying to develop that. So everybody bought, first it was the big screen TVs. First the colour TV came in, was this size, and everybody's going, wow, colour, isn't that amazing? And then the colour TV stretched out to this and that and that and that. And sometimes you go to a devotee's home and they've got a TV about this big, you know, it's like, wow, you know, yeah, we watch the classes on this, you know. So,
oh, yeah, okay.
You know, and now it's 3D. Yes, but then I can see my Guru Maharaj in 3D. You know? 3D TV, that's the next thing. 3D printers. 3D printers, that's a big thing. Everybody's wanting, you know, oh, I can produce things in 3D. What next? You know, what's the next thing? If we think now, a flying car perhaps? You know, virtual TV where you can actually become part of the film? You know, there's always material energy is always putting up these things that we can really get our teeth into, you know. So, very expert in creating propaganda that'll increase your hankering and lamenting. And when you haven't got your virtual TV, you'll start hankering. You know, Sridhar Krishna's got a 3D TV. Why can't I have one? You know, stuff like that. So, anyway. So the more we put fuel on the fire, the hungrier and hungrier the fire begins. It just burns and burns and burns. So our thing is, we should decrease the fire. We should decrease our selfishness and extinguish the fire. The same propensities we have for satisfying our hankering and desiring, the same propensity can be utilized, that same energy can be utilized in service to Krishna. And that gives us real peace and pure joy to the soul. That's where it's at. So we learn to find happiness in seeing Krishna pleased. We learn to find happiness by seeing Krishna pleased. We understand that Krishna is pleased. Nasochiti nakanchiti. Again, we want to please Krishna. Not hankering for anything or lamenting for anything. A devotee doesn't care for anything. Living very simply. So we must cultivate that sort of consciousness. What we strive for in life, we will attain. You know, a lot of these self-development people say that. Whatever you focus on, you will attain. You know, also the law of attraction, you know, that the secret and the law of attraction. Whatever you really focus on, you will attain. So people have those boards in their house, you know, I want the Mercedes Benz, I want the house, I want the pool, I want this, I want a gorgeous wife, I want a gorgeous husband. And they put this up so the first thing they see, so they have this thing, what I strive for, I will attain. You will. You know, eventually you will. So a devotee in the same thing uses that energy, what I strive for, I will attain. So your, what do they call that, bhakti, those boards that they have with the design? Huh? A vision board. So our vision board should be, how can we serve Krishna? How can we please Krishna? What can we do to please Krishna? So many different ways we can please Krishna. And if we strive honestly with our hearts to really find pleasure, what's giving Krishna pleasure, then we find real pleasure because Krishna's pleased. And you know when Krishna's pleased. You know when you've done something for Krishna. When Muchikunda Prabhu has finished one of his wonderful paintings and Krishna's vibrant, Radharani's vibrant, the cows are dancing, he knows that he's pleased Krishna. When we've worked at the office and we've got a bonus and we can give something to the temple, we know that that's pleasing Krishna. So that satisfies us, and that's a joy and a fulfillment that can't be compared to anything material. So Krishna will ultimately fulfill all our desires. Krishna will fulfill all our desires, whatever desires. It may not be completely in this lifetime, but it'll carry over in the next lifetime. But your desires will be met. So our desires should be 100% just serving Krishna. So great souls, and this is the final part, great souls, their ambition is simply to serve the person that's serving the Lord so nicely. Great souls are the ones that say to, well, who is that person that's actually serving 100% and who's really pleasing Krishna? That person they want to serve. So this is the mood of a devotee. Yasya prasadam, Bhagavat prasadam, yasya prasadam, nakatikatopi. How can I serve those who are serving the Lord? Therefore it is said that if you please the spiritual master, spiritual masters, both the spiritual master and the spiritual masters, you have many, many people that are encouraging you, enlivening you, enthusing you. So by pleasing the spiritual master, you please Krishna. So helping the spiritual master, you actually please Krishna. Therefore, a devotee's life and soul should be to see that the guru is pleased, and if he knows that the guru is pleased, then Krishna is pleased. Understanding that it's not just your Diksha guru, but it's all gurus. Anyone that you feel is helping you in your Krishna consciousness is your guru, Shiksha guru and Diksha guru. It's not just, I'm exclusively serving my guru and I want to see my guru, Indradumna Swami, I want to see him happy or I want to see Prabhupada happy. No, it's all those people that are helping you, that are nourishing you in your spiritual journey. You want to see them happy just as well. You know? So this is very, very important. They concern themselves not with heaven or hell. They don't concern themselves with pleasure or pain or the latest things. All they're concerned about is how they can please Krishna. What does Krishna want? Krishna wants that everybody comes home back to him. So we have an opportunity with the upcoming 40th anniversary of Melbourne Temple to serve the Lord's dear devotees. This is a great opportunity for us. A great opportunity. because there are so many senior devotees that are going to be coming here for this event. They want to... These devotees were the ones that set up this temple. They worked very, very hard to get this temple set up. And they want to come and celebrate this unique event that happened 40 years ago. 40 years ago, they did such hard work, and their remembrances, because it's also part of Krishna consciousness that we remember our service. And so they want to come here to remember the service that was rendered. They want to remember their God brothers and sisters. They want to remember the liaison they had with His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. They want to honor Srila Prabhupada. So what our job is so we get a chance to assist them in any way we can. This is the great opportunity for all of us. Now recently I had an opportunity to talk to Ramai Swami, who'll be coming actually. So Ramai Swami was saying that at the opening, was anybody here at the opening of the Pune temple? Nobody? He said that it was a remarkable thing. At the opening of the Pune temple, that the congregation went out of their way to welcome and accommodate every single visitor that came to the opening of that temple. They had organized in such a way, and there were thousands of people that came from all over India and internationally for the opening of this temple. Each person was treated with such respect, with such welcoming, and everything. He said you couldn't want for anything. In their homes, they made you welcome. They had prasadam for you. They had a comfortable bed, everything. You know, so in the same way, we want to have this hospitality extended to the people that are going to be coming to this festival, this 40th anniversary festival. It is so important that each of us, Grihasthas in particular, somehow or other, do some service for them. Whether it's we either in areas that you can assist are such things as billeting. There are so many devotees that are coming. We don't want them to go to hotels and just be left in a motel or something. We want them to actually come to a devotee's home. No matter where you are, whether it's in the western suburbs or in Elwood or whatever, if you have some special space where you can house some devotees, please come forward. And then if they're in your house, make them so welcome. You know, offer them anything, you know, to keep them happy. And so we need people to billet some of the give accommodation to some of these people, and the way we're going to be doing that is through Kasturika Prabhu. She'll be taking people's names as to who is offering a room in their house that they can be billeted out, that some of our guests can be billeted. Then we need transport to take them back and forth to the temple, to perhaps do a little bit of a tour with them, whatever they want to do, to take care of their needs and comforts, you know, whatever they need to do. To help offer some nice healthy prasadam, because one of the things, a lot of them are older, and a lot of them have expressed the desire that we don't want to have big rich sabjis, but we like steamed vegetables and so on and so forth. And so we have to accommodate that and make that also there for them. Make them comfortable in as far as seating is concerned, comfortable in many, many different ways. So it makes this a memorable occasion. So, as I said, the great souls, their ambition in life is simply to please those persons that are pleasing Krishna. And these people have pleased Srila Prabhupada no end, because they were the pioneers to set this place up. You know, we all came. Even I came 37 years ago. They'd already established the basic setup of this temple. You know, and it took so much to get this. And they worked so hard, tirelessly. And you'll hear the pastimes of these devotees when they relate what they had to do to actually build this place. Gauramandala Bhumi, he'll explain one thing, that he was trapped underneath the temple where something collapsed on top of him and a beam. He was stuck underneath the temple. So there are all these different stories that you'll hear, which are wonderful. Maybe Sanghanath can remember some of them. Sanghanath was here in those days. So we have to really make these people welcome and really encourage them, you know. So on behalf of the temple management, I sincerely ask you all to help over the weekend. We've got about 5 weeks left. So Kasturika will be taking any of your friends. I mean, not everybody is here. So could you please pass on that message to your friends? If they have a spare room, could they accommodate some people? So I'll stop here. Now, instead. If, has anybody got a question first? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. But you go through the motions. That's, you go through the motions. That's the main thing. And the genuine feeling of humility will come. If you didn't do the motions, then it won't come. He didn't bow down, so it won't come. But you're making the effort, even though you don't feel like it. And you're not on your own in that. All of us as conditioned souls, you know, oh God, I've got to bow down again coming into the temple. Has anybody had that sort of feeling? Yeah. So, but eventually, it will become a natural thing as your consciousness grows. But you're making the endeavor. You're doing what's required. So that will come. Okay? Yes, Prabhu? Did you have a question? Yeah. Yep. With humility. When you find contradictions, even in the spiritual world, there's contradictions. You've got Radharani's right wing and left wing factions in the gopis and stuff. So there's always going to be some different takes. But you're just with humility, that's that person's understanding, and then you evaluate in your own mind which way I should go, you know. I mean, that, like, say, for example, that's the same with us at the moment, you know. My spiritual master wants to preach more with Western people, you know, with the Krishna West program, and you know, it's caused a little bit of a division, although it's recognized now by the GBC, but and there's a need for preaching to Western people, and so, but some people say no, we should be more culturally Indian, and so they're going that way, and so there's a bit, but you know, you have to find your own way, what feels right for you, intuitively, what feels right for you. So yeah, there's always going to be conflict, but in your own way, you're always humble to all of them. Always very respectful. Is that okay? Okay. Krishna conscious adventure. Tirthapad. What was yours for this week?
One lady that we met the last catering we went to, she's just like completely free spirited kind of person.
Yeah. Hey, how are you all?
I didn't really remember her actually. She sat in the class. And then, so, she's just like, full on, like, oh, what can I do to help?
Really?
Yeah. And so I just showed her around the temple and I explained, yeah, when you come to the temple, you know, you respect and you offer her basis. And, like, they lifted the talk. So she did that.
Wow. No, she started. She started her journey. That's a good story. Who else? Oh, you got another one. Jai.
He told someone that, you know, chanting is the quickest way to enlighten.
Unreal. How does that make you feel? Inside.
I'm just amazed, like, at this guy. It's like pretty cool.
Can you conceive of any type of happiness in a material world that things like that make you feel? There's nothing that compares to it, correct? All right, ladies. Yeah. Rasa.
My daughter the other day, she told me she was walking on the street and she saw a Jew with a cat.
Yeah.
And she said he had a neck big
That's amazing. Wow, tremendous. Yeah, the Jewish man here really loved the prasadam also. It was really nice. Aditi, you did a good job. That cake was a winner. Okay, anybody else? Yes, Beck.
Tell the story about how someone weren't sure what they could eat.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. Because we're all in the room there, right? And Muslims have a very strict diet as far as halal is concerned. And the Jewish people also have a very strict diet as far as kosher is concerned. So being the first time that they came here, they weren't sure if they could eat the cake and the drink. So they sort of politely just had it sitting there. You know, they didn't say, I don't want it, but they just had it sitting there. And everybody else, you know, the Christians were just like, oh, wow, this is a nice cake. So then we started talking about catering. And the leaders of the community from the council were saying, oh, the Hare Krishnas are so good. You know, they don't use onion and garlic. They cook in such a pristine sort of way. You know, it's all natural foods and all that kind of stuff. And it's quite suitable for a kosher and halal. And as soon as the magic word dropped that, you know, how we cook our food, all of a sudden the Muslim guy starts eating the cake and the Jewish rabbi starts eating the cake and drinking. Ooh, this is nice. And I thought, got him. Our secret weapon, prasadam. Okay, one more story. Hang on a tick. Who would like to do it? Somebody really... Okay, Prabhu, you. Yeah, you. Did you have a spiritual adventure this year, this week? None. Next time you have to have one. You have to have a look for it. Who'd like to say who had a spiritual adventure? Did you have one, Balaram?
There was some conflict at work this week.
Oh, good one. Isn't that amazing? So that's perfectly that's in line with what we're saying. In your occupation, you surrendered it to Krishna, and Krishna gave you joy. By pleasing Krishna, saying, well, I'm not going to hanker and lament over this thing, I'm just going to accept it, and my Lord, I hand it to you. Whatever you wish, it's your, you know, and Krishna resolved the situation. That's so nice. Thank you for finishing up with that. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi, Hari Bol.